All right, on the line with us right now is Warren Ashmore, who was a newsman and news director of WTMA back in the 80s. Exactly when in the 80s were you on the air?
Let's see. We were there in 85 and 86, left just before January of 87.
When the station changed to a country format and let everybody go.
Absolutely. That was kind of the beginning of the next phase of my life. It kind of prompted some decisions, but had 2 good years there. And, you know, it's strange how things come back to you. I was listening to the interview you did recently with Jay Donovan, and he's talking about the 2 transmitters that were in the back of the building. Of course, being there in Charleston, there were always hurricanes floating up the coast, and we never quite knew where they were going to be. And I remember one night there was one that was just off the coast, and we couldn't decide where it was going to land. And we told the management we would stay on the air until the water got into the transmitting tower, and then we were out of there regardless of what was going on with all of that power. And then one afternoon, I was there late in the afternoon working, and we smelled something very strong, and it turned out that one of the stages of the FM transmitter had caught fire, and that was right behind the AM studio. And there was some concern I forgot who was on the air at the moment, but as the fireman came running down the hall to try to figure out how to put out an electrical fire, it was some interesting days there on the bay, if you will.
All that electricity surrounded by all that water.
Oh, yes. You know, and that was always the challenge, that if that water in the bay got too high and got into those buildings, of course, we were going to be wading around in highly charged water, and that was not something we wanted to do.
Now, where were you before you came to WTMA? What was your broadcast background?
I had moved to Charleston in mid-'81 with WCSC as their news director and stayed there, I guess, about a year, and then went through a period of doing nothing for about 8 months, better known as unemployment, and then hooked up with WIXR, which had just opened over in Mount Pleasant, was living over there, worked for them on a part-time basis for a little while, kind of keeping ends together. I had a wife and 2 young children, and just having moved down from New Bern, North Carolina, they were not willing to move again, and neither was I. Could have probably found a job quicker if we had moved, but really enjoyed Charleston. I think from the moment my wife and I got married back in 71, one of our goals was to live in Charleston, and so we were just unwilling to move very quickly. So worked at IXR part-time, and then was offered a full-time job over at WGCA as their news director, and was working over there when the CJ and Buzz team called me in early 85 and said, would you like to come over here and be news director? And so was over there for the last, I guess, 4 to 6 months of the CJ and Buzz morning team, did the morning news with them. And so that was kind of how I got there.
What was WGCA like?
It was just kind of a fun operation. I started out working midnights, and of course we were playing everything that went back to the 40s and 50s, and I was a big fan of big band music and some of the older stuff. I've always been kind of broad in my music preferences, so I didn't have any trouble with it, and I guess I worked midnight to 6 for about 6 or 8 weeks, and they decided they were going to reinstate a news director's position. Apparently nobody was doing it per se at that point, and so since I had been news director at CSC, they thought probably could do it, so I moved to the morning shift and did news there for a while, and they started having troubles too. This was that time when FMs were really starting to take over, and GCA was an AM station, and we were really doing oldie-goldie stuff, you know, 50s and 60s and 40s, and so we were not doing well in the ratings and financially and everything. And somehow the corporation scraped up money and bought a little Christian music station that was struggling up in Somerville. And so they were going to operate partly out of there and partly out of Charleston. And because of the way the license read, they had to keep at least somebody at the station in Somerville for the time being. Rules obviously have changed a lot now. And I was chosen to be the one who was going to drive and do my news from the Somerville station for GCA. About 2 weeks before that was supposed to happen, I was going to have to start driving to Somerville every morning and being up there for 3 or 4 hours a day. CJ and Buzz called, offered me the news director's job, and it took me exactly 1 hour to say yes. So I guess I was at GCA maybe 6 months, but I think we knew we weren't that big of a ratings threat, but we just relaxed and had a good time with it.
As long as you beat Woke in the ratings, you were okay, huh?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It's interesting how you bump into people. We hired a guy at night up there, and I don't remember what the air name he was using, but the more I looked at him, the more I kept thinking, I know you from somewhere. He had a beard, and his hair was a little bit longer, but I could not imagine where I knew him from. So one night, we started talking about where he had worked before. Now, I was a teenager growing up in Columbia, South Carolina, when WCOS was the station there. That was the teen station. And one of their DJs was Jack Brown. I had formed a friendship somehow with Jack Brown. I went up there to do the high school teen report show on Saturday morning, you know, when stations used to do that kind of thing. And Jack Brown was the host of it. And I became such good friends with Jack that when he was doing a remote broadcast in a little remote studio that was built like one of those old DK-77 microphones, he would let me come and sit in the booth with him at remotes and cue up records and things like that. Well, that was in the 1960s, early 60s, 59, 60, 61. Here we are, it's 1985. Jack Brown is now the night man at WGCA. I mean, who would believe you would run into somebody like that?
What was it like working with CJ and Buzz? What were they all about from your perspective?
I mean, this was a wild team, and I always did my news, even though we had the dual control boards in the main control room, I did most of my newscast out of the news booth, and I could not see them. And, of course, being somewhat of a comedian myself or liking to cut up, a lot of times in radio, you know, we play off of each other's visual cues, and so it got to be kind of crazy sometimes with the zaniness of those two. But it was really interesting. They were very successful, and they treated me with respect, and although I was very serious about news, I was always willing to cut up with them, and I think that was part of my success with them. I didn't contribute anything to them other than just a foil sometimes, but it was a fun time to be there.
Do you remember who you replaced as a news director?
No, I don't. I guess I was kind of, at that time, rocking in oblivion over at WGCA and really wasn't aware of who was at TMA. I know that TMA was kind of the station next to CSC that everybody wanted to work for, so I was quite pleased when they called and asked me to come over there. And we were talking about morning people, of course. After CJ and Buzz came Jay Donovan, and that was a trip. When Jay came in, I started doing the news across from him. We had our differences in humor, but we got along real well, and I remember one day Jay went down a road that I didn't particularly want to go with a joke, and so I just kind of stood there, and after we got back into the music, I looked at Jay and I said, you know, some of this I'm just not comfortable with, and that's all right. I don't have any problem with you doing it. So if I'm feeling uncomfortable, I'll back away and lean against the window, and that'll be your cue. You're on your own. But Jay was fun to work with. Real nice guy. I enjoyed all of the people I worked with there. Steve King was the program director, and he came in after CJ and Buzz left.
Who was his predecessor?
I think CJ and Buzz were doing the program directing to that point. I'm not aware of who else was involved, because it was CJ that called me and offered me the job, and so I kind of assumed that he was the program director at the time.
Do you remember who was on the air after CJ and Buzz when you were there before Steve came?
You know, I've thought about that, and I guess I'm having early Alzheimer's. I am just as blank as a piece of non-written news copy, I guess you could say. Most of my dealings were with Jay in the morning and Steve, of course, being program director. And then, of course, Bill Poston was the newsman who was on staff when I was there. Bill was kind of a holdover. He was there before I came, and very frankly, at times, I wondered why they didn't offer him the news director slot and bring in somebody under him, because Bill was a very competent newsman, very intense at times, but could be a lot of fun. We always talk about certain things in our lives. Where were you when certain things happened? And I remember I had just finished my noonday shift and turned it over to Bill and had walked out to the front lobby to kind of shoot the breeze with the receptionist and a couple other people on lunch breaks. Suddenly the receptionist picked up the phone and she said, Bill wants you back in the newsroom. And it was about 10 after 12. He said, CNN has just broadcast the pictures of the Challenger exploding. And of course that ended up being several days of work, you know, pulling together side stories and everything. I think that's kind of the one major thing that happened while I was there, was the Challenger exploding. And I remember calling my wife, who was working for an architectural firm downtown in Charleston, and calling several other friends, because the shuttle program had become kind of lax at that point, in that the networks didn't broadcast every time they took one off, and CNN was the only network covering it, and Bill was just watching it to see what was going on nationally and saw it live.
So it was a two-person news staff, you and Bill?
Yeah. And, of course, I got to the station around 3 o'clock in the morning and went on the air at 6 and worked till noon. We did news on the half hour, every half hour from 6 until 10, and then at that point we shifted to on the top of the hour until 3 in the afternoon. And then from 3 to 6 in drive time, we did news every half hour. And, you know, the challenges of being a two-person news department is you run yourself ragged. We did a lot of stuff by phone, A lot of the officials in town were very generous to make room for us to do phone interviews on things that were coming up or things that had happened, but it was not unusual for Bill to come in early or me to stay late to cover news conferences that had been called that we knew we had to be there for, and then participated in getting things written up and prepared. Of course, we were part of Mutual News at that point. We carried Larry King Live overnight, and they carried Mutual News on the hour after 6 o'clock. I still have somewhere in my tapes several news feeds that I did to Mutual News one evening when a hurricane was along the coast and turned in at Buford rather than coming on up the coast. And I remember what sparked it. I was listening to like the 10 o'clock news, and I had already seen on the wire and had already heard from a couple of the sources that the hurricane had turned in just below Buford and was doing minor damage. And Mutual came on the air and said the hurricane is still lingering off the coast. So I called Mutual and told them who I was and where I was and said, you know, we have reports the hurricane is now ashore and everything. So they had me do something I had never done before, and probably the only time I've ever been on network news. They had me ad-lib two or three reports or just kind of descriptions of what was going on for the next 2 or 3 hours. I led Mutual News, if you will, with stories of what the hurricane was doing and everything. Life was never dull down there with the hurricanes and just the normal stuff of being in radio at that point.
What kind of philosophy did you have as far as being the news director of WTMA, or how much instruction did you get from the programming department on how to do the news?
We kind of took the idea that we were there to cover the news that people were interested in and that affected their lives. We tried to follow up on items from city council and county council. We followed up on crime reports, those kinds of things. Before I got there, there was kind of a news competition among several of the stations that would pay people to call in and offer news tips, and you gave away the News Tip of the Week award, and you gave them a certain amount of cash or something like that. And about the time I got there, the decision was made, and I was in agreement with it, that we really didn't want to do that, that we were paying for insignificant stories, and that we really needed to spend our time doing our own digging. Bill Poston was an excellent reporter at being able to get out in the field and interview people when we had things like that going on, and I had had some radio and television experience in doing that kind of thing. So our basic goal was to cover local news. We did national headlines, as I remember it, just one or two liners on the major national stories of the hour, but our focus was really what was going on within the Charleston area that we covered. The idea was to get it on as soon as we could. We had a news car with a mobile radio in it, and when one of us went out covering something live, we had a way to break into the music format in between records and do a brief report from the scene, so to speak, and then get back to the station and pull out the voices. We tried to do a lot of voices in the news, not just Bill and myself talking, but the people who were either involved in the story or the people who were affected by the story.
Did you ever use stringers, or did you have an association with one of the TV stations?
Neither. It was just Bill and myself. I think that idea of stringers and other things came in a couple of years later, and it's really interesting to me to look at the way that radio and television now cooperate in the news effort. I know here in the Clemson area, there are a number of radio stations in the upper state South Carolina and the western part of North Carolina that broadcast live the 6 o'clock newscast from one of the local television stations as a part of their local news. And of course, the weather forecasters at the various television stations are on some of the local radio outlets as their meteorologists, but that had not developed at that time. That was still pretty much every station to their own. You did it, and if you couldn't get there, you just didn't have it.
What about the end of WTMA as a viable, live, fully staffed music format? What was that like? Did you know about it? Was there any writing on the wall, so to speak, or did it come as a total shock?
It caught me by surprise. It's interesting that the newsman was one of the last ones to know, but we weren't in a lot of contact with the front office management. When you come in at 3 and leave at noon, by the time the management is ready to talk to you or you could sit down with them, you've already left for the day because you've already put in 8 hours. But I remember that Steve King, bless his heart, called me at home on a Wednesday night, and he said he had just talked with Bob Winters, who at that time was the general manager, and that the corporation had made the decision that as of January 1 of 87, they were going to automate the AM station, and that all of the staff was going to be let go at least by January 1st, and he said, I have it on good authority that you're going to be called in tomorrow morning and have to make a decision. And he said, I didn't want you to be caught by surprise, but he said, please, you have to be very careful because I'll lose my job if they find out I warned you. So I got called in and was told that indeed we were going to automate and that one of us in the news department could work two more weeks and then would be terminated and the other person could stay for 6 weeks. And having had time to think about it and talk about it with my wife the night before, and I had already decided that I was going to fire myself and leave Bill Poston. Part of this came because I was at that time working on the weekend pastoring a small church out on John's Island, St. John's United Methodist. That was a source of some income. I certainly wasn't going to be able to live off of that, but my wife had a good job, and we were looking at that point at going to seminary sometime in the next year and a half or 2 years, and so we just kind of looked at it that this was something that we could deal with. So I honored Steve's request. I asked Bob if I could have an hour to think about it, which I really didn't need. I'd already made my decision. I went back in the news department, sat by myself, did another newscast, walked back to the front and said, I'm fired, which kind of caught him by surprise. But my whole reasoning was that Gail and myself, she had a good job, and I knew that we could survive until things straightened out. Bill was married to a young lady who was studying medicine at MUSC, and he was the sole support at that time. So I just made the decision that he needed more time to find a job because he was the sole support. So I fired myself, walked back down the hallway, said to Bill, you have 6 weeks to find a job, explain what was going on. Went in and did my noon newscast, said goodbye, and was gone from WTMA just that quick.
Wow, did you by any chance record that last newscast?
I didn't even think about it. You know, it was one of those things, it was swirling around us so quick that I don't think anybody thought to. And part of my thing was, if they were going to start cutting back, that they really ought to start cutting back right then. I guess it was that I kind of suggested to him tongue-in-cheek that did he really think my heart was going to be in working 3 a.m. to noon for 2 weeks knowing my job was over? You know, it just all happened so quickly. I don't think any of us thought to do any recordings or that history was being made or anything like that. And as calm as I think I was, it was a shock. If you've been in radio and TV any length of time, we've all gone through ownership changes and things like that. I think part of the shock was not that it closed down so quickly, but that was the second station that had fallen out from under me, because when I was in New Bern, North Carolina, working for a friend who had bought an AM-FM station and I was the operations manager up there, the recession of 1980-81 caused the same kind of thing, only he not only went to automating both stations, he eventually sold both stations. And so this was kind of the second station to collapse under me, and it was kind of devastating, to say the least. And it's hard to take. It's like a child that you're losing, because you invest a lot of your energy and a lot of your thought and a lot of your working time in that kind, keeping that thing going. And it was disappointing when TMA went the road it did for a lot of reasons. For me, I'm very careful about blaming God for things that happened, but I did tell my wife as we were talking about it, like I say, we had pretty much decided that going into the United Methodist ministry was something that we felt like we wanted to invest our lives in as a way of serving God. So we had been talking about going to seminary in the fall of 88 to give ourselves a year and a half or 2 years to save up some cash. Well, when this came up in 86, we looked at each other and said, you know, maybe we need to go on in the fall of 87. So I got on my horse and applied to Duke Seminary and to the seminary at Emory, which is known as Candler. Was accepted at both places. We looked around and decided Atlanta was where we wanted to be. So I did some part-time work for different places. I even went back to WCSC Television in mid-January. They hired me. I had had several years of television experience. I went to work for WCSC TV as the weekend producer-writer for the 6 and 11 o'clock news on Saturday and the 11 o'clock news on Sunday night. And I did that until May of that year, and then we moved to Atlanta, and I started seminary. I graduated from seminary in 1990 and have served a number of places around South Carolina since then, and now find myself sitting in the associate pastor's position here at Clemson United Methodist, and I'm working with youth and older adults. And just to show you how things that go around come around, part of my reason for being here at this church is that we are building a new sanctuary and worship facility that we'll be into next year. And with the audio and video vision that the pastor and I share for the new worship service, obviously my 25 years in radio and TV are exactly what I need to do this job. So Life has been, it's been interesting. I really have enjoyed my life, and there's sometimes I think I'd like to be back doing radio again, and I wouldn't mind doing it, but working with young people and working in the church setting just gives me a real sense of helping people find their way in life.
Looking back at your time at WTMA and the times that you lived in Charleston, what do you think WTMA meant to you as your broadcast career progressed, and what do you think that WTMA meant to Charleston and the Lowcountry over the years?
For the Lowcountry, I think TMA was one of those traditional stations that had been around quite a while. It had a good reputation. Coming in as news director, for me, it meant that I needed to put my best foot forward. Here was a station that was respected, was, as an AM station, struggling against the building dominance of FM, but just insisted that it was going to survive, that it was going to be there to provide news and information, as well as entertainment. And I think that it was living up to the reason it came into being, and that was to be kind of an entertainment and information source for the Lowcountry. And for me, it was really a joy to work for that kind of company that knew it mattered and wanted to make a difference in the market. And I know it was probably a hard decision for the management to do what it did of taking it to an automated format, but at least it survived. And I think that that's the important part, that the owners understood that this was a station that needed to be on the air and needed to be there. And that was what I lived with each day, that we wanted to be sure that if we reported something, it was right. If we reported something, that we were as quick to get there and to have it right as possible. And in the programming side, as far as the music and the DJs on the air, there was that sense that we're doing something that matters to this community, and we need to put our best foot forward on it.